Hey True North, it's Friday, February 5th. My name's Eugene. Welcome to This Week in Review. So every Friday, what we're going to try and do is have a portion of our pod called This Week in Review, where we just look back at the past week's major headlines, news, events, whether it be local, national, or global, and just see how we can process them as a Christian and as a church. See what maybe actions are asked of the church in light of these events, and how to pray and think about these moving forward. And I think one thing I wanted to bring up is something that actually happened this past Tuesday on January 26th in San Francisco. That Tuesday night, there was a big vote in the San Francisco Board of Education, which decided that they would be renaming 44 schools in the district, elementary to middle to high school. A lot of these schools were named after historical figures of the nation, and a small committee within the Board of Education decided that a lot of these figures did not fit the ethical standards that they deemed necessary. Now, much of what is happening is kind of taking place all over the nation, as especially with this past year and this past summer, a lot of our nation's educational institutions and just people and society as a whole, we as a nation are dealing with the reckoning of our nation's history. Jeremiah Jeffries, who was the head of the renaming committee, said, "What we're doing, this is important work. We're in the middle of a reckoning as a country and a nation. We need to do our part." Now, I think a part of that, especially as a Christian and pastor, I find to be necessary, that no nation is perfect, including our own, and a lot of our history we have to deal with, especially as the church, and we need to point out what is wrong. But what the problem with at least this event that happened this past Tuesday highlights is the other side of the spectrum. I think the dangers of cancel culture. Now, why I say that is because when you take a closer look at the names of the schools and figures that were deemed unethical or need to be renamed, a lot of eyebrows start raising up. There's a great piece in the Mission Local written by Joe Eskenazi that kind of details the debacle of this whole process. You see, when you take a closer look, you see that these schools, certain schools named after Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Paul Revere, even certain schools named after places like El Dorado or The Mission, were deemed to be renamed due to unethical guidelines. And this piece in the Mission Local, which Joe Eskenazi wrote, really breaks down the lunacy of some of the actions taken into renaming these schools. A lot of it is pointed out that their historical facts, or even any attempt to find historical facts, were actually just Wikipedia sources and History Channel websites, and that for a lot of these discussions to debate whether or not these names should be renamed were literally, and I mean this quite literally, a matter of seconds. And to take a bigger step back, the reason why I'm choosing this event to kind of highlight today on the pod is that I think this kind of shows the danger of what I and you might already know of cancel culture in our society. This temptation and addiction to look at any sinful past of whether it be a figure, a person, dead or alive, and to cancel them. To essentially amount so much shame and so much social upheaval that that person, whether dead or alive, is completely canceled from the society and culture that they live in. And we've heard countless stories of people losing their jobs, people losing their livelihoods, people being doxxed online, maybe for certain actions and sins that were probably unjust. But when you take a closer look at especially what's happening with this school renaming process, there's a couple of things that as Christians, I think we should consider and even push back with this addiction to cancel culture in society today. I think the first thing that really stood out as I read a lot of these pieces was the idea of truth, especially in the frenzy of cancel culture. You see, within the school committee's process and discussion in trying to rename these schools, there's a Google Doc that's actually available online if you go to this site that kind of highlights and shows their thought process behind why they thought certain figures or certain schools need to be renamed. And the funny thing is, when you take a closer look at the source material, you realize that a lot of these data points or historical facts were sketchy at best and disingenuous at worst. I mean, one thing that stands very poignant from this whole process is that not a single historian was advised during this process. Jeremiah Jeffries actually has a really long quote that I'm going to read out, and I find it to be really interesting. He writes this on why no historian was consulted. Jeremiah says, "What would be the point? History is written and documented pretty well across the board. And so, we don't need to belabor history in that regard. We're not debating that. There's no point in debating history in that regard. Either it happened or it didn't. Historians have reference in their own histories. So I don't think there's a discussion about that. And so, based on our criteria, it's a very straightforward conversation. And so, no need to bring historians forward to say they either pontificate and list a bunch of reasons why or say they had great qualities. Neither are necessary in this discussion." And that quote is very telling because as you look at some of the sources that were used to rename these schools, it's pretty sketchy. There's a Wikipedia entry that was listed for James Russell Lowell. A committee member stated that this was a 19th century poet and diplomat, and stated that on a Wikipedia entry, he found that he did not want black people to vote. But James Eskenazi, as he done more historical research, found that in a scholarly biography of this person, that he unequivocally advocated giving the ballot to recently freed slaves. I mean, if you went to college or any higher education or even high school, I mean, you know how sketchy Wikipedia is. I mean, you yourself as a sixth grader often can change those entries. To use that as a historical fact or basis to try and rename educational institutions in San Francisco seems just a little absurd to me. And even more crazy is a citation that this committee used to rename Paul Revere, that it was used from a top 10 list from the History Channel website. Now, it's pretty complicated what they tried to do, but if you read the piece in Mission Local, you realize that all of this was just completely wrong. And this points to, I think, a deeper problem in our society today, especially as Christians, that we should observe, that often the idea of truth, objective truth, is no longer a standard in our society. That so often from confirmation bias and the fuel for vengeance or the fuel for justice when we see injustice blinds us to seek truth. That so often we do not seek truth, but we seek confirmation to our emotions, to our passions, and to our principles. And I say this, look, I think as we observe injustice, especially in these past couple of years in our nation, whether it be racial, societal, wealth, financial, right, shout out to Wall Street Bets, I think there should be a demand for justice, especially as Christians. But as Christians, we cannot just shortcut our way to justice and ignore any truth, which leads to the second point that I want to bring up, that I think what cancel culture is doing as a society as a whole is just canceling dialogue. I mean, the fact that it took 7 seconds to decide that Abraham Lincoln was not worthy to be named, a school to be named after him, just shows the amount of dialogue put in to any of these decisions. You see, for Abraham Lincoln, much of the reasoning behind his cancellation of Abraham Lincoln High School in San Francisco was that he endorsed the 1862 Pacific Railway Act and the Homestead Act, which led to settlers heading west and bloodily destroying Native Americans in that area. And he's also faulted for hanging 38 Native American warriors in Minnesota after an uprising. Now, those are pretty heinous sins too, but to allow those to overshadow his place in the national history of our nation, of defeating the South in Civil War and issuing the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed slaves, seems dubious at best. But to even allow just 7 seconds to settle that debate just shows also a deeper problem, that in our nation and in our society, and even in the conversations that we may have across the board, we do not have time for dialogue. We come to quick decisions, we come to quick judgments, and that ultimately leads to blind anger and blind vengeance. And I think the biggest problem from all this, and kind of connected with cancel culture, and I think society as a whole, is its view of humanity. That it's so interesting in how cancel culture has allowed us or transformed us to view people for who they are and what they do. You see, what cancel culture ultimately is telling us is that it only has room for perfection for human beings. That until you, as a person, are able to show a perfect track record of no racist statements, of no outbursts, of no sins, then you are deemed worthy to be a part of society. And this is where the Christian framework and narrative ultimately fits in so perfectly, that it tells us in Romans 3:23 very clearly that all of us have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But Genesis 1 also reminds us that every human being, no matter how far they have fallen from the grace of God, carry God's image, that we're image bearers, that all of us have the potential to be God's messengers and kings and queens in this world. And that's where the Bible paints these figures that we often look with interesting, you know, worship or glory as broken figures. That King David, that although we learn in VBS, he's the one that took down big bad Goliath, he's also the one that lusts after Bathsheba and sends Bathsheba's husband to death in war so that he can have Bathsheba for himself. You see, what scripture tells us is that no one is completely a sinner or a saint, but actually a mixture of both, and that we need to wrestle and deal with that. You see, cancel culture, what it does is it forces people to either be a binary choice, and either A, a saint, or B, a sinner. But it refuses to see that even people probably in that committee, when you take a look at their historical records, not just their Twitter feeds, not just their Facebook comments, but their whole life, there will be so many moments that for all of us, we would deem to be cancelable in our society today. You see, what this ultimately points to, and this is the biggest point that I wanted to make, is that the gospel actually speaks to the needs, the cries, and the anger from cancel culture. And, you know, let me set the record straight. I'm not saying that from this that we could name a school after Adolf Hitler and that would be fine. No, lines need to be drawn very clearly. But there needs to be room for grace and discussion around that. You see, the reason why we as Christians can use the gospel to speak into this moment is because we need to really dissect what is cancel culture really asking for in a society. What it's ultimately asking for is justice. That when they see injustice anywhere, that justice needs to be served completely and fast and suddenly. And I think that's actually a human instinct found from being image bearers of God, that we even have a concept of justice. And what cancel culture ultimately demands injustice to be rendered is through, to borrow a church and Christian term, it's through legalism. It's by your works. And I say that from a tweet that I actually read this past summer. Philippa Sue, who played the original Peggy in the musical Hamilton, if you're a Hamilton nut like me and my wife, tweeted this, which I thought was a really good summary of what cancel culture is asking for in the people that they cancel. If you are quote-unquote canceled but do not wish to be, you must work to earn back people's respect by owning up to the thing that canceled you in the first place. Listening to others, educating yourself, and advocating on behalf of the people that you have offended or harmed. So what she's ultimately saying is an example that if someone's found to have racist tweets about a certain indigenous group or ethnicity, that you, if you are canceled and somehow people come through mob mentality to cancel you from your vocation or from a social media account, that you need to show and earn back the people's respect, whether it be through deeds, whether it be through an apology, then you need to educate yourself, listen to yourself, and advocate on them. And this is the thing, I think everything she says in the latter half of her tweet is completely correct, that people who, especially people who fall into the sin of racism, do need to listen to others. They need to educate themselves and advocate, especially for those that they commit racism against. I think that's the ultimate picture of even Christian restoration. But to think that would come by working to earn it back is, I think, a problem. And I think to counter that, Elizabeth Brunick, a writer in the New York Times, who I enjoy reading a lot, writes this. There's just something unsustainable about an environment and culture that demands constant atonement for their sins, but actively disdains the very idea of forgiveness. And I'll read that one more time because I think she said it really well. There's just something unsustainable about an environment or culture that demands constant atonement for our sins, but actively disdains the very idea of forgiveness. You see, what cancel culture ultimately demands is atonement. But I think what humanity and our culture needs at this moment is forgiveness alongside that. That for a lot of those to, as Philippa said very well, to listen to others, to educate themselves, and to advocate on behalf of those I've committed sins against, that they need to be forgiven first. And you might think, well, that's just, you know, being the lesser man, or that's just weak talk. But I get this from the gospel, that actually on the cross, that perfect justice was delivered, not just for the people that you observed, but for all of us. And on that cross, the person that stood there taking every ounce of guilt and sin that all of us should be counseled for told us, look, turn the other cheek. And this is the thing. This doesn't mean just ignoring racist comments. This doesn't mean ignoring the injustices of this world, but to confront them, to fight against them, but to also have alongside your desire for justice, grace, mercy, and forgiveness. Because that ultimately is the healing power that can be given to humanity. And how do I know that? Because that was given to us on the cross. See, what the gospel tells us is that the desires of cancel culture are correct, but the means are not found by mob mentality of canceling someone, but actually found on the cross. And I think this is why the scripture tells us that vengeance is the Lord's in Romans 12 and in Deuteronomy, because when we place vengeance in our hands, it blinds us. It turns us into our own God that gets to determine who is guilty and who is not. So given that, I hope this, that look, you know, when you hear stories of cancel culture or San Francisco renaming schools, from a lot of us, you might not bat an eye, but in a lot of our personal souls, we commit cancel culture maybe privately all the time, whether it be to your spouse, maybe to your kids, maybe to an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, maybe to some drama you're going through with in your friend group. And I ask us this, whether it be on a national scale or on a personal scale, to resist the temptation to cancel someone, but to embrace not just the atonement for whatever sins that you've seen committed, or maybe even sins committed against you, but to also embrace forgiveness, grace, and mercy to bring restoration. Thanks for listening. Again, we hope to find you here next week on our next This Week in Review. And until then, hope you have a good week.